Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, how are you? Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good day. I hope this finds you in a very lovely state of mind and place, wherever that may be. I like to think about how and where and when you might listen to this podcast, Soundtracking with me, Edith Bowman. Maybe you are off on a lovely stroll somewhere, either solo or maybe with a furry friend. Maybe you're commuting either to or from work on public transport or in the car. So wherever you are, hello. And thank you very much for taking the time to listen to my podcast. It's called Soundtracking, if you're joining us for the first time. And I get to talk about film and music with all manner of wonderful and inspiring people. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. It's good to have you with us. And our latest guests on Soundtracking, I mean, they've got to be pinching themselves after the film they worked on together landed a staggering 9 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and Best Score. All Quiet on the Western Front was adapted and directed by Edward Berger and scored by friend of the show, Volker Bertelmann. And the recognition they are receiving across the board is richly deserved. This is quite an extraordinary and physical experience of a film. I kind of couldn't speak after watching it. The story is over 100 years old. The book that it was based on was released 100 years ago. And it's a story of war, the First World War. But it's a story of war that resonates today. And I think that that's definitely where it's connected. If you haven't seen it yet, it's available on Netflix. Watch it in its traditional German tone with subtitles. And just be ready to be very moved. And very, very entertained as well, because I think in terms of storytelling, it's pretty extraordinary. And performances, whoa! Well, we'll get into that with Edward and Volker. And Volker has done the most wonderful job with the music, and it's with one of his cues that will begin Rain and Night. Great to have you on Soundtrack, and thank you so much for being here, Edward, and welcome back, Volker. We've had you on once before, so it's so great to welcome you back. And thank particularly you. Just this film is just connecting with people on such a huge level. You must feel Volker, you were kind of saying you never know kind of whether it's going to connect or not, but this film really has. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think first of all, what I mean by you never know is, sometimes you feel the strength of a movie, but there's not the right time or there's not the right space for it. And you're hoping that it will receive the reactions that you as well feel. But in this case, I have to say, it's also like over all the age groups. I mean, I see people like my daughters, they just permanently send me messages from their friends which are in the middle of their 20s, and they are not asking for, hey, my dad made the music for that film. can you just go into it? It's just like spontaneous reactions from specifically also very young folks, and you know, which I think is fantastic that it has actually that wide range of age that is interested in it. And I think that also leads to a lot of discussions, and that leads to a lot of communication. You know,
yeah,
that means that the film is getting more feedback. So that's my impression. What happened?
What about for you, Edward?
I can only agree. Yes, I get a lot of messages from my son also, who has it from his friends. And it just became, I guess, a topic of conversation in schools among grown-ups. It's a topic that doesn't get old, unfortunately. It's a very famous book. You know, a lot of people have heard that book's title and think, oh, you know, I've heard that somewhere, even if they haven't read it. And I think the book is also so successful because it describes the machinery of war, which we, you know, could talk about also regarding to focus music or the sound of the movie, but in a way that, in a very laconic way, not over emotionalizing, but leaving that up to the audience to fill that, or to the reader to fill that in with their, you know, to supply that emotion. And we try to translate that to film, and I think that probably also resonates with audiences, that they feel they are responsibility for their own, they feel they are responsible for their own emotions and can sort of add them in themselves and are not guided too much by us. You know, and I think that autonomy of the audience is important to them.
Before we get into music, I was just wanting to ask you about, you know, adapting the book and how that journey was for you, and if it was, you know, if you really kind of had a really clear idea of visually how you wanted to tell the story as you were working on the screenplay.
So I start forming a feeling of the movie, the visual sense of it while writing. It's really important to me to know how to shoot it. And I shy away from scenes that I don't know how to shoot and I can't write them. And you sort of have the feeling, I start seeing the main character. And in this case, it's very much Paul Bäumer's movie. And I couldn't write any scene that takes us out of his perspective. For example, I couldn't write a scene that goes with Kat, one of his colleagues, or any of his other comrades, because it wouldn't be Paul's story. And except from the negotiations of the armistice, for example, that is obviously the contrast to the trenches, the higher-ups, that is to heighten almost the feeling of that Paul Bäumer has to create a contrast. And so you start forming a relationship with a character and also a visual sense of the movie while writing, or at least I do. I couldn't do it otherwise. And then slowly, of course, the team comes in and you do it with the cameraman, you do it with Volker in terms of developing the music. But a sense of it in your stomach that you can't express, that I can't express as well as Volker. You know, I can give him three sentences. I would like this kind of feeling. And then he can translate that. And it's the same with camera person, production designer, and all that. They all bring their wonderful craft to that.
It's like the best recipe in the world, isn't it? Everybody bringing their own ingredients to it. Yeah. So what were the conversations? Because, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, that kind of almost, the almost industrial nature of war. And it's that kind of machine almost. That was one of the things we were talking about, that kind of that first cue that you hear, and then it kind of stops and we get the kind of, you know, the title of the film comes up. And then as we get into the film, this really powerful, almost like three note kind of, I don't know how you describe it, but what were the conversations that you had when you were talking about, you know, how the music was set and what it needed, how much it needed, and what the kind of musicality of it would be really?
So I let Volker describe most of it, but I think we had a screening in Berlin, maybe in October or so, which is like a few months after Rap. And I had a pretty good cut of it, but it wasn't done yet. And we saw it in the cinema. And afterwards, or before, I said three things. As I said, I can't translate as well as he does, as he can. So I said, please make the soundtrack for this movie, because I believe, you know, I believe only you, and I would love you to tap into that. I would love you to do it. to create something that I've never heard before, that is, and that the audience has never heard before, and that you've never done before, you know, something special. We really wanted to have something new, because I know when I watch a movie and I suddenly hear the soundtrack that it immediately touches me completely differently. You know?
Yeah.
And so that was the big thought. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
completely different. Please. And then the other was, can you find a sound that expresses what is inside Paul's stomach? That is basically what everyone in the crew sort of like, that was on North Star, camera, anybody, you know, like, let's express what is inside of Paul's stomach, that feeling, that fear, that rage, that wish to die, that wish to kill, that wish to survive, well, depending on the situation. And the third was, what was the third, Volker?
This destruction and the snares. That were the two.
Destroy the images. You know, let's destroy. Let's not beautify it. Let's not over emotionalize. Let's not sentimentalize. Let's destroy it. Yeah, and I think that's it.
Yeah.
Do you take that that idea of going, do something I've never heard before, is that kind of a luxury, or is that terrifying, or is it both?
Definitely both. I mean, you don't want to, if you feel like, hey, do what you always do, then that's a little bit like, you know, I mean, I know that I can do that, but at the same time, it's not challenging. And I mean, my life is short in terms of experimenting. So there's a lot of things that I want to try out. And I think of course, it's a pressure. But I would say if I would be 10 years younger or even more than that, it would be maybe a lot of to digest if somebody says, hey, do something. Because there are so many different thoughts that you have when you want to do something new. But I know a little bit, I know myself, in the sense where I have to put blockades in front of me so that I can't move over them. And I just have to find a different path. And in a way, I think I learned that when I prepared the piano, because in a way, I was always used to play a piano, you know, without any objects in there. And it, of course, it's very nice as an instrument and you can play great music with it. But I always felt that this is not enough for me. And so when I put blocks on certain strings, I have to change my habit. And that also makes my brain work differently. Suddenly I'm like, oh, I'm always using the C. Where is it now? And it doesn't sound like C. It sounds suddenly like a drum or like a snare. And so I have to find out how I work around that note to find a different solution. And that's a little bit how, not how I was working here, but I had an idea of, you know, when I came home from that screening, I had an idea that I want to use an instrument from that time, which I actually have here in the back. This is the harmonium of my grand-grandmother.
No!
Yes.
Wow, it's beautiful.
That's the one. Yeah.
Wow.
That's it. And it's just like the octave, like this is just playing the three notes. And then I put that through a big amplifier and, you know, and some distortion, and that's it.
Just like that.
Yeah. No, but what is of course, and I think that's very interesting what Edward said, because first of all, when you receive a film where you have already so much thought put into it, like let's say you're not doing things that are not fitting, like picture wise, that is already something that is a big advantage for me, because I don't have to create music on films where I suddenly have these jumps of like, oh, why do we jump now into the past, or why do we do this now, you know?
Yeah.
And that can, of course, sometimes very nice, but a lot of times it's a little, you know, you have a lot of scenes where you have to find a solution that is not musically a solution, that is much more like a technical solution to,
yeah,
let's say to gap certain things. And so in a way, when you have a film like that and you watch it and you just sit in front of a harmonium, you just know you play these three notes and you think, oh, maybe that's already enough for the film. So when I sent it to Edward, of course I was a little bit nervous when an initial idea, and I'm not saying that I'm afraid of changing things, or you know, if there's not an agreement, I'm working again, and I think I work as hard as possible to get to find actually a common ground. But in that sense, in that case, it was really the one idea that I sent to him, and I was waiting for feedback. And the next day, I really received an overwhelming feedback, and I was very thrilled.
I said it sounded like Led Zeppelin. And I think it really does. And that is a huge compliment for me. You know, I think, and especially in a movie like this, you know, what I like is that it doesn't sound historical. It is a historical instrument, but it doesn't sound historical and doesn't make the movie a period piece. You know, you could easily do that with music. And also what I love about this instrument that you see in Volker's background is you put so many microphones into it while recording it, right? So that you hear all the cracks and creaks of this instrument. It's basically you pump with your knees or your feet, right? You pump air into it.
Yeah, and, you have the pedals. There are the pedals down here. And
wow.
These pedals here are, you know, that you see underneath. These are the pedals that I have on my knees. So you have a lot of cracklings in the, you know, when the wood is working.
And again, that's sort of the, you hear the machine of the music. Yeah. And I love that, that the machinery of that sound, of that thing. And it's part of that cinematic theme, I guess.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, you know, over the years, and I would say that all also goes back to the prepared piano in a way. I was always working on recording instruments in a way that I'm getting not only the tone, that I'm also at the same time, because some performances you can only record once, and then they these are the best ones, and you have only the chance to get that one recording right. And the more microphones you have, the more you can, you know, you don't have to redo it. You just switch microphones on or off. You say, like, I want to have the, let's say for the string instrument, I want to have the bow, the hair of the bow very closely. And if you don't have a mic there, it's gone. But if you record it from all sorts of different angles, and we used like 8 up to 10 microphones, like we had microphones inside of the harmonium, like behind the green here. There were some microphones that were just recording the air, you know, and you never know if that is enough. But suddenly when all that is very present, you just need you don't need any other instrument, because it sounds so like you're inside of an instrument. And I love that.
Once or twice, when Paul dies and when the French soldier dies, we use that sound sort of as the last breath, you know, of these men.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's... the air is one thing. I mean, the breathing and the mechanical aspect of it. And I have to say, it was mainly the first passage of the film that also made me gave me a lot of courage, because I had the feeling there was so much space And a lot of things were told, but there was not much sentences. You know, there were not many words that explained clearly what's going on. I mean, there was just this passage of cleaning the uniforms.
And absolutely. Once
that was done, I mean, everybody knew what this film will be.
That's so funny because I was just looking at my notes quickly, and one of the things that I wrote down is like no dialogue, but there is story and character development in such an intense way. Yeah, I mean, from that first, the imagery and that scene when you're looking up through the trees at the start, and it's got such a peaceful and beautiful kind of come in, you know, kind of to the film, and you're in immediately, you know, with the characters and the story. And I do think that the way that you've been so confident with the space and the sound and the silence as well at moments as well, because it's so important to have that. It's not been overburdened with things, with, you know, with the sound of war or artillery or whatever that is, or with the cue. There are these moments that nature comes in, that just things exist. And I was really interested about getting that balance right of how easy that is with the two of you in the conversation of how much you need in there, how much additional is required on top of, you know, what you've already cut, Edward?
To me, it was very important from the beginning to create that contrast. In a way, the movie is totally about contrast anyway. In the story, as I mentioned earlier, there's the generals and the signing of the armistice that is in contrast to the people in the trenches. So that's a contrast. And that's suddenly much quieter. Mm. And there's darkness, there's brightness, there's loud, there's low, and nature and destruction. And these nature images, they were in the script also. And they were also in my first pitch when we sold this movie. I thought, I really want to create these pockets of quiet, these pockets of silence, and almost pockets of peace to heighten the war. You know, to make the destruction even worse, because you realize, oh, right next to it, or just a minute ago, I saw these beautiful foxes or these beautiful, beautiful trees, and just nature and the silence of it. And it could be so easy, you know, and it's the place we want to get back. It's the opening image, the fox. And we want to get back to that, the mother with the cub and the warmth of that and the family. And so I think that sort of takes us through the film, that feeling of, and we realize as we watch it, and that makes it hopefully then heartbreaking, how we lose all of that and how these young guys lose all of that. So, yeah, that was sort of in our minds from the beginning. Yeah. And to just also give that air and leave that silent and just let the images do the work for themselves and give you rest, to be honest, because otherwise it's just too much. You know, you just walk out and you just think like, oh God, I can't take it anymore. It's difficult as is already. So you need some breaks in between, I think.
Your cast are extraordinary in this as well. And Felix, particularly, is Paul, you know, you say this is his film. Where did you find him, and what was that process of finding him?
I mean, he is the producer's wife sent me a picture. It was the first picture I saw of any actor for this role. She works in a theater in Vienna, and in the Burg Theater. It's a very big old theater. And he would just had left drama school and had just started there and was part of the ensemble there and had small roles, but no one really paid attention to him. And she thought, like, she said, "This is a massive talent. You should look at him." And I immediately liked the picture because he has this old-fashioned, beautiful, transparent face. He doesn't look like the typical hero. I had some young guys in the casting that looked like Brad Pitt, you know, that any American movie probably would have taken.
Yeah.
And they were great, you know, but I thought, like, they just look, first of all, too modern in a way.
Yeah.
And also too fit, too heroic. You want someone for that role, it's especially for a German soldier, you know, he needed to look studious and frail and sort of being thrown into this environment that just doesn't fit. He's not a fighter, you know? And so he came and I put him through four or five castings, I think, poor him, because obviously he'd never done a cast. He'd never been in front of a camera. Yeah, so he came and he was wonderful, but I thought, oh, can he carry it? And is he really, I was suddenly afraid of my own idea of putting this frail person in there. And I thought, like, maybe I need someone who's more of a soldier. Yeah. And then my casting agent, who just passed away 2 days ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And she has a wonderful post mortem, how do you call it? Like in memoriam nomination for the BAFTAs for her work. Oh, and she was a wonderful, like, kind and understanding woman. And she said, you should put a uniform on him and you should put boots on him, because just see, when he wears boots, he's going to walk very differently. You know, he suddenly has a gait and you know, like, you wear hiking boots compared to sneakers, you walk differently. Yeah. And so he came next time and this uniform fit him so great. And he immediately was transported back to the time. His face fits beautifully. And the boots were exactly what she said. It grounded him. It gave him a heaviness, a kind of, and he took that from casting to casting. He was so receptive and so started inhabiting that character so that in the end, there was really no choice anymore. It was just him.
Wow. That's like fairy tale story, that, you know, in terms of.
Yeah.
That's magical. How much of that performance inspired you, Volker, you know, in terms of. It's really hard to describe because there's so much depth to it, so much that scene where he goes back with the uniform and goes, well, I think this is someone else's. Even, you know, from that moment to kind of everything else that's asked of him at this film sort of thing, the journey of it's extraordinary. How much of Felix's performance inspired you when you went away to think about those three things that Edward had kind of asked of you?
Well, I mean the performances, Felix's performance, but also the other performances.
Yeah.
I mean, they are inspiring you in a massive way, because I mean, you don't have to do much, you know. You're not forced to create an atmosphere that is in a way covering the acting, or, you know, enhancing certain feelings or whatever. So that was definitely fantastic. What I also like about it, and that was for me much clearer now after that film specifically, I really love when the film is dealing with real life aspects somehow. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though this is a very sad topic in a way, but at the same time, it feels real. And in that moment when I feel that there's a real aspect of my life touched, it's much easier for me to make music, because I totally feel how it was when I was, let's say, when I had to decide if I want to go to the army or if I want to join the civil service, or you know, when I saw the first people die, and when I was working at the hospital, it's actually things that are suddenly coming back to you, and they are inspiring you when you make music. And you don't want to, you know, in real life, when you see something tragic, you don't want to take your piano out and play a very sobby melody on top of that. Like,
yeah,
you know, you just want to, in real life, you want to find something that is delicate, words that are fitting, in the right time, at the right moment. You know, you want to find expressions that are helping to get over certain situations, or you want to find words that are pushing someone over a hurdle. You know, I mean, you want to be human in a way.
Yeah.
And I think that helps with the compositional process in a big way.
Even like the snare as well, it's almost kind of like that thing of, you know, the drum that kind of, it did so many things for me. It was almost kind of like, oh, you know, that kind of that fear thing of like hearing a noise and that almost like, you know, I guess PTSD that soldiers have whenever they hear a loud noise sort of thing, or they hear, you know, that one beat of thing, or in that moment of, you know, that idea of marching to war as well. And that it's not a kind of, I don't know what the technical term is of...
Tum-tum, like a tum-tum,
yeah.
You mean.
Yeah, but it's just that kind of, you know, those that singular beat or a couple of beats and stuff, just pulling it right back. It makes it even more, yeah, powerful.
It came from a PTSD that I have of my own drum playing when I was a teenager. I used to be a drummer, and I was a terrible drummer with two left hands, I think, really stiff. You know? Like, I was just not very good. And so I always told Volker, I think it was the most complicated cue that we had, because I had something very specific in my mind. It's the simplest one, but the most, it took the longest, because I wanted someone who can't play the drums to play those drums, you know, like to sound like just crooked. And of course, when you get musicians, they can't do that because they're too good, you know. So I don't know. It was very specific.
Is it you playing? He got you in to play then?
No,
I think I was too bad.
No, I think it was also a question of you know, like the imagination of something that is broken or that doesn't work is not always what you want. In the end, when you record somebody who can't play the drums, you hear it and you're like, oh no, that's not what I want. I want to have something that sounds more broken. So in the end, that was a long process. I mean, finding the right drum sound and finding the right snare, recording a lot of instruments where you think like, oh, that it's maybe like an iron snare with like, or, you know, like it has a different, we tried different, bodies of snares, like wooden snares, you know, metal snares, all that. In the end, it's a combination of layers of different snare drums, but also like a crancasa that has a lot of rubbish on the fur. And, you know, when you bang on it, like all the rubbish flies up and it lands. So you have like this whatever chaos after, you know, one bang on the drums. And what is nice about, I mean, I love processes like that. Waking up in the morning and putting rubbish on a crancasa and just bang on it and just, you know, just feel the accidents in a way. I love that a lot. I have to say that process was very long, and we had we were looking at each other and like, I don't know if we get there, you know, because it was of course a little bit. Yeah, the imagination is one thing, but like creating that in a way that it's also a part of the score and elegant in a way, at the same time, it's distracting and it creates these weird disruptions in a way.
But you got there because it's brilliant.
Yes, I'm very glad about that. And honestly, it's also a question of mix, you know, of everyone who is actually taking care afterwards. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes I forget about that because, of course, I'm always asked questions about the composition and the three-tone instrument and, you know, like, what is it? And I love to talk about that. But in the end, you can mess up a lot of things when they are coming to the mix table and you're feeling like you've done everything. And then, you know, it's just buried under, let's say, big noises or something. But in this case, and I think that goes back to Edward's first explanation of how he's writing scenes, when the things are in order and when they make sense, it's so much easier to place a sound in a certain place,
yeah,
where there is space. Mm. If something is not really like shaped well, it's transferring down the line into all the departments because you have to fix things. And this is not really sitting right. And the next thing is trying to, oh yeah, we have to get around it. And then the mixing is very complicated. So it translates into all the, it trickles down.
I think you could tell that I could talk to you for hours about this film. I just, thank you for the most amazing experience and huge congratulations, so deserved, for all the recognition that you've had so far. And I think there's quite a lot more to come as well. So I look forward to seeing you up on a podium with a couple of acceptance speeches, well, quite a few, in fact. Thank you so much for your time. It's great to chat to you about it. Nice to see you again, Volker. Thanks, Edward. Have a great day.
You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
From the score to All Quiet on the Western Front, that's Nightfires, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with Edward Berger and Volker Bertelmann. My huge thanks to Edward and Volker for taking the time to talk to us. As I said, you can watch All Quiet on the Western Front right now on Netflix and is definitely worth finding the time to do. Head to edithbowman.com to hear my previous conversation with Volker, as well as all other episodes of the pod. There's only 350 to get through. Follow us on social channels. We are at Soundtrackin' UK and feel free to send us an email. We're info@edithbowman.com. In fact, I have one here from Natalie Schneider. She says, Edith and Soundtrackin' team, I hope you had a wonderful start to the new year. I was listening to Soundtrackin' whilst driving back from family yesterday. And as usual, I enjoyed the few seconds of the theme music that I hear at the end of each episode. After years of listening to the show and wondering what this music is, I wanted to finally get in touch and ask. I've Googled it, but couldn't find anything. Is it original or taken from something? I really like it and love to listen to an extended version. I hope to hear from you. Wishing you great days and a happy new year ahead. Thanks for this lovely show. Always a joy to listen to. Best, Natalie. Natalie, thank you so much indeed. And the honest truth is, it's my husband, Tom Smith, who's in a band called Editors, who had it kind of lying around, to be honest. So I asked him when we were launching the podcast, have you got any nice little bit of kind of classical-ish music lying around that I could use? And so he gifted us what you hear a little bit of in the show. So yeah, very chuffed that it's very close to home and something that he's created and makes me feel lovely because he's part of the show as well. So There we go. Thank you very much indeed for that, Natalie. Next up, really excited because we've talked about his work on the show a lot, not least with a composer that he's worked with a number of times, Clint Mansell. Darren Aronofsky is our next guest on the podcast talking about The Whale, which, a bit like All Quiet on the Western Front, has been receiving some pretty impressive acclaim on the awards circuit as well, not least for Brendan Fraser's performance in this film. And it was really great to get the chance to talk to Darren about the film, about the performance, about the music in the film as well. And so I hope you will join us for the next episode with Mr. Darren Aronofsky. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Stephen at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Stephen.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.